When I decided to run for the United States Senate, I wasn't so sure of myself. By all appearances, my choice of career seemed to have worked out. After spending my first two terms laboring in the minority, Democrats had gained control of the state Senate, and I'd subsequently passed a slew of bills, from reforms of the Illinois death penalty system to an expansion of the state's health care program for kids. I'd continued to teach at the University of Chicago Law School, a job I enjoyed, and was frequently invited to speak around town. I'd preserved my independence, my good name, and my marriage, all of which, statistically speaking, had been placed at risk the moment I set foot in the state capitol. But the years had also taken their toll. Some of it was just a function of my getting older, I suppose. For if you're paying attention, each successive year will make you more intimately acquainted with all of your flaws. The blind spots, the recurring habits of thought that may be genetic or may be environmental, but that will almost certainly worsen with time, as surely as the hitch in your walk turns to a pain in your hip. In me, one of those flaws had proven to be a chronic restlessness, an inability to appreciate, no matter how well things were going, those blessings that were right there in front of me. It's a flaw that's endemic to modern life, I think. Endemic, too, in the American character. In any event, it was as a consequence of that restlessness that I decided to challenge a sitting Democratic incumbent for his congressional seat in the 2000 election cycle. It was an ill-considered race, and I lost badly, the sort of drubbing that awakens you to the fact that life is not obliged to work out as you'd planned. At some point, I arrived at an acceptance of my limits, and in a way, my mortality. I refocused on my work in the state Senate, and took satisfaction from the reforms and initiatives that my position afforded. I spent more time at home and watched my daughters grow and properly cherished my wife and thought about my long-term financial obligations. I exercised and read novels and came to appreciate how the earth rotated around the sun and the seasons came and went without any particular exertions on my part. And it was this acceptance, I think, that allowed me to come up with the thoroughly cockeyed idea of running for the United States Senate. An up-or-out strategy was how I described it to my wife. One last shot to test out my ideas before I settled into a calmer, more stable, and better-paying existence. And she, perhaps more out of pity than conviction, agreed to this one last race, though she also suggested that given the orderly life she preferred for our family, I shouldn't necessarily count on her vote. Freed from worry by low expectations, my credibility bolstered by several helpful endorsements, I threw myself into the race with an energy and joy that I thought I had lost. I hired four staffers, all of them smart, in their 20s or early 30s, and suitably cheap. We found a small office, printed letterhead, installed phone lines and several computers. 4 or 5 hours a day, I called major Democratic donors and tried to get my calls returned. I held press conferences, to which nobody came. We signed up for the annual St. Patrick's Day parade and were assigned the parade's very last slot, so that my 10 volunteers and I found ourselves marching just a few paces ahead of the city's sanitation trucks, waving to the few stragglers who remained on the route, while workers swept garbage and peeled green shamrock stickers off the lampposts. Mostly, though, I just traveled, often driving alone, first from ward to ward in Chicago, then from county to county and town to town, eventually up and down the state, across miles and miles of cornfields and bean fields and train tracks and silos. It wasn't an efficient process. Without the machinery of the state's Democratic Party organization, without any real mailing list or internet operation, I had to rely on friends or acquaintances to open up their houses to whomever might come, or to arrange for my visit to their church, union hall, bridge group, or rotary club. Sometimes, after several hours of driving, I would find just two or three people waiting for me around a kitchen table. I would have to assure the hosts that the turnout was fine and compliment them on the refreshments they'd prepared. Sometimes I would sit through a church service and the pastor would forget to recognize me, or the head of the local union would let me speak to his members just before announcing that the union had decided to endorse someone else. But whether I was meeting with two people or 50, whether I was in one of the well-shaded, stately homes of the North Shore, a walk-up apartment on the West Side, or a farmhouse outside Bloomington, whether people were friendly, indifferent, or occasionally hostile, I tried my best to keep my mouth shut and hear what they had to say. I listened to people talk